Brian Haney, who has logged more travel miles here in the last week than about anybody in America. And he's gone to some really cool destinations. He went to Vegas, and he won so much money in Vegas that he decided to take a trip to the Bahamas. And now he's back in Kansas. Right, right, Brian?
Something like that. I think Santa probably logged more miles than me. But
that's true.
At least between the 23rd and 24th, I was traveling quite a bit. Yeah, we had a fun stretch there. I don't know if I'll ever attempt this again. It was pretty ambitious and, quite frankly, very fortunate that we pulled it off without any travel delays or any kind of hiccup. But there were 13 hours between the official sign-off on the KU men's basketball postgame there at UNLV to the pregame show for the Bahamas Bowl in Nassau, which is three time zones away. Had a red-eye flight through the night, had a connecting flight in Miami. Again, if there's one little delay of 30 minutes or more, I'm toast, and I don't know what we would have done. But thank goodness it worked out. Had a good bowl game to call on the other end of it, and obviously KU got a big 18-point win out in Vegas. So it was a fun 24 hours I'll never forget.
Yeah, it was definitely worth your time, it sounds like. And now you are revived, I guess you can say, re-energized as you're back here and getting ready for KU's Big 12 opener against TCU tomorrow night, which people can hear on Z96.3 The Lake, the home for the Jayhawks here in North Central Kansas. But before we get to that game, let's go back to the UNLV game. First half, very impressive first half, and then I didn't have a chance to watch the game. I was out with my family, and we had our Christmas thing that night and everything else. But I was told by some friends of mine that are KU fans that KU played really well in the first half. And then they said they took the foot off the gas like they did against Nebraska and then kind of coasted to a win, turned up, kind of turned on the go button when it got down to about 10 or 12 points. Is that a fair description that they gave me?
Yeah, I think it's probably pretty accurate. Coach Self called that playing to the score. And he said that's been one of the frustrations, even in the midst of an 11-game winning streak, because obviously when you're 11-1 and about to be number two in the country with UCLA losing last night, should Kansas win tomorrow, you'd think you'd be right up there near the very top of the national rankings. There's still plenty of things you can get better at and nitpick, and one of them is he feels like when his teams have built huge leads, then in the second half there isn't that same intensity. He wants the killer instinct of putting the foot on the throat of the opponents and just ending it, you know, in pretty, you know, convincing fashion right out of the gates there in the second half. But part of that, I credit UNLV, and that they came out and hit some shots that were well contested. They gained some confidence, and so I give them some credit there too. But no doubt, you know, Kansas could have won this thing more emphatically than what they did. And I don't know how many chances you're going to get to do that on the road in Big 12 conference play because of how good this league appears to be from what we've seen the last couple of months. But certainly in some of the home games at Allen Fieldhouse, you hope Kansas will be able to go ahead and put teams out of their misery earlier and not play to the score like Coach Self is suggesting, because everybody in this league is good enough to go on a run to get back in the ball game. And as we've seen in any upset scenario or recipe, the longer you allow David to hang with Goliath, the longer you allow the underdog to stay close with the heavy favorite, the more confidence and belief they get. And so hopefully we'll see Kansas, you know, play the role of the dominant team that puts teams away early as many times as possible. I just don't know how often you're going to see that on the road. And while I know everybody expected that at UNLV based on how many points Duke beat them by, this was a UNLV team that was a little bit healthier and I think better than what folks are giving them credit for. So I didn't lose too much sleep on an 18-point win as opposed to 30 points at UNLV.
Hey, well, there's 18 or 30. It's a W. You don't make excuses for that or feel bad about it, I don't think. And
yeah.
But there's high expectations when you're at the level that KU is. They're now 10-1. Let's talk about the post-rotation. As we know, Azubuike is out for the season with the wrist injury. How was that post-rotation handled by Coach Self in that game against UNLV, and how do you see it moving forward coming up in Big 12 play beginning tomorrow night?
Well, I think what he'd like to do is stick with four guards, one big for the bulk of the first half in these games, with Landon and Carlton rotating in as that one true big on the floor. But due to foul trouble and in some cases ineffectiveness, you're going to need to dip deeper into that bench at times. And that's where right now he has Mitch Lightfoot ranked as his number three big and Dwight Colby his number four big. And that would be the pecking order. But he said this could present some scenarios where you play with a more traditional three guards, two forwards lineup with Carlton and Landon playing side by side, because that would be a more natural positioning for Carlton and a chance to play at a more optimal level for both of those guys, feeding off the other big in there. But he can't afford to do that early in a game, because with the depth situation being as thin as it is, it's a situation where if you get two quick fouls on one of those guys, all of a sudden the other guy's going to have to play the rest of the way, or you're throwing a Mitch Lightfoot out there who still is pretty green, quite frankly. And you know, Coach said something interesting about Mitch yesterday, talking about how you hate to just say go out there and don't screw up, because that kind of, as he termed it, you know, that takes away a guy's game, or it gives him less credit for the player that he can be. And we forget this is the number 67 rated recruit in the country, but he is still figuring things out as a young freshman, and you know, he's going to be a completely different player by this time a year from now. So Coach Self, when he puts Mitch in there, he just wants him to run around, make plays with rebounding and hustle plays. Don't feel like you have to be stepping back, knocking down 16, 18 footers. Don't feel like you have to, you know, come up with some big, amazing defensive stop. Play good assignment sound defense. Slide your feet. Be in the right place. Box out. Get the 50-50 balls. Do that thing. And keep the bar raised close to where it was at when you entered, not feeling like it'll be some kind of world beater by any means. And if that's the case, they could get some good minutes out of Mitch Lightfoot if he doesn't try to do too much. But to your original question, I think they'd like the heavy portion of the load here to be carried by Landon and Carlton, and they'd like to, in some stretches, play him side by side. But I don't think you're going to see that much in the first half of ball games, because it's Coach Self's goal to get to the locker room with both those guys having less than two fouls, and then you'll have more freedom in the second half to tinker a bit, mix and match those rotations and those lineup combinations, because that's just not a luxury that Jayhawks are going to be able to have with nine scholarship players for the rest of this season and only four of them in the post.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, our guest today. It's brought to you by Matt and Michelle over at Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by 118 North Mill in Beloit or call them 738-5701. Josh Jackson, the Big 12 Player of the Week, and he just continues to get better and better. And Coach Self saying this week that he's still got another gear he can get to. That's pretty scary for upcoming opponents.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's right. I mean, and it's not just as simple as the way Josh puts it. I asked Josh about that quote, and he said, well, I suppose that extra gear would be me hitting more free throws. and yes, that would probably add 3 to 4 points a game if he hit at the clip that you think he can hit. It's not as simple as that, though. I think that there's more things he can do in a lot of phases, and that's saying a lot considering he's your top rebounder and he's your second leading scorer, and he's a guy that maybe has the ability to take over a game about as well as anybody when you talk about both sides of the floor and how he can fill every stat column, you know, known to man there, blocks, assists, rebounds, steals, points, all of that. You look at the way he opened at UNLV, he was 6 of 7 to start the game, 14 first-half points, and much like their last game in Kansas City versus Davidson, where Coach Self said, man, he was just a couple of makes away from really blowing the lid off and having that huge breakout game that they're talking about nationally, I think this was a similar scenario. He wound up 1 point shy of his career high because he missed his last five shots. He missed a dunk. He gave up a ball on a chance to score around the rim, too, because he's so unselfish. And point is, it was a nice week, a nice game at 21-9 that earned him Big 12 Player of the Week honors. But he could have easily gone for north of 30 if you know he was able to kind of keep it going at the same efficiency that we saw in the first half. So he's been tremendous, and yet I think that, that there's chapters to be written and untapped levels of potential. If you want to use a video game analogy, he hasn't quite gotten his player rating up as high as it can be. There are certain things that I think we'll see over the course of the next couple of months that have yet to be seen here in non-conference play.
So conference opener coming up tomorrow night in Fort Worth against the Horned Frogs of TCU under a new head coach, Jamie Dixon, who's an outstanding coach, and they're off to a good start. What can you tell us about TCU going in this game tomorrow night?
I think they're really good, and I don't want to be the guy that always comes on here and tries to not scare our Jayhawk brethren in your portion of the state, but you know, talk the opponent up too much. I don't want to be that guy, but let's look at what all Jamie Dixon's working with here. He's got five players that average 9.2 or higher, four of which that are between 10 and 11 points per game. So if they're anything, they're balanced. He's got some pieces that I think Coach Johnson, you know, clearly was assembling something there that you could win with and be competitive with Brodziansky in the post, J.D. Miller in the post, you know, Parrish, a guy who can score it from the wing. And then he brings in several new faces, including the Jalen Fisher kid that was rated number 34 in the country. And while Kavar Shepherd, who was previously their highest-rated signee ever, a guy that Kansas looked at, while he never has completely put his potential fully together, I think this is a kid, Fisher, that's absolutely living up to the billing as a top 40 recruit. And you're going to really be impressed with what you see there. They've got a guard transfer from Texas A&M, too, who's scoring over 10 a game. And so they had some nice pieces. Dixon added to that. And I'm telling you guys, this is a situation where I think TCU under Jamie Dixon will be a perennial top six or seven team in this league, which perennially is usually good enough to be right there on the NCAA tournament bubble. And that's saying something because, you know, you're talking about a program that most years has been the doormat, and on the years when they've risen up, you know, above that lowest rung on the ladder, in some cases it hasn't even been good enough to finish in the NIT. I think with their location geographically, with Dixon's reputation nationally in terms of former national coach of the year at Pitt and all that, and the fact that they just a couple of years ago pumped all those millions into this renovated stadium, arena there, I think this is a program that's going to take a leap that puts them maybe not in the thick of winning the conference title, although I do like the potential of this freshman and sophomore group a couple of years from now. But I think it's going to be a tough out every year going down there, and I think you're going to see them, as their play-by-play guy told me yesterday, have the potential to finish in the top half of the league. Maybe not this year, but certainly much closer to that top five than what we've seen in their entire previous Big 12 existence. I think this could be a sixth or seventh place team. I really do. So we'll see. You know, 11-1 looks great now, and obviously the rubber meets the road when y'all start playing each other in Big 12 conference play. But there's enough talent and enough scoring options on this team, I think, to be competitive most nights. And so this will be a good test for Kansas right out of the chute, not a game that KU fans should take for granted at all.
And then on Tuesday, KU will host Kansas State, and that will be at Allen Fieldhouse, of course, coming up on Tuesday, January the 3rd, 8 o'clock tip time for that. And we won't talk to you again until after KU's played K-State on Tuesday. And we all know, and K-State fans are well aware, of the struggles they've had. Of course, most teams struggle when they go to Lawrence and play at Allen Fieldhouse. Your thoughts on K-State? Have you had a chance to see them a little bit?
I haven't seen them a ton, but I've been reading the box scores, and none of this start surprises me. I think that you know, anybody that was listening last year at the end of the year when folks were talking about Coach Weber and his future, and I get it, K-State fans know and love Brad Underwood, and they wanted a chance at him. You have to remind yourself, though, just 3 years ago, he's the Big 12 Coach of the Year, and they earn a share of the Big 12 title at that point. And I saw a trio of freshmen last year that was very similar to the situation that I was covering on a day-to-day basis at Texas Tech, where once those guys became sophomores, which last season at Tech they were, Tubby Smith had to take that next leap to the NCAA tournament team, and they clearly had, you know, that young foundation, guys they could build around. I think you saw that last year. And so I personally felt like, hey, man, if folks will just be patient, you know, this is a club that's going to have a chance to put it together and be a lot more competitive than they're getting credit for. And so I'm not at all surprised at the 11-1 start. And I think that, you know, clearly if Marcus Foster stays out of trouble and stays on that roster and isn't, in some cases, the distraction that he was, they wouldn't have had the dip that they had that had folks, you know, questioning, you know, the future under Bruce Weber and all that to begin with. I mean, look at what Foster's done at Creighton up there.
Yeah.
So, excuse me, I feel like K-State fans actually have it a little bit better than what some were saying a year ago, and you just have to be patient sometimes and ride out the ebb and flow of you know, recruiting and bringing in new guys and trying to get the pieces to fit. And I think that's going to be a very challenging game next week, absolutely. And everything I said about TCU being competitive and competing toward the top half of the league, you can recycle that and put it on K-State as well with a slightly different shade of purple, because I believe the same about their potential this year. It's a really good league, guys. I mean, it's, you know, 1 through 10, you show me who's the weak link this year.
Mm-hmm.
Tough to see 2 months in. One will emerge, I'm sure, based on injury or something. But right now, I don't see a weak sister in this Big 12 Conference 1 through 10.
All right, so I need to ask you this, and this is not the off-the-wall question, by the way, but I need to ask you. New Year's Eve is just a couple days away. You have big plans to bring in the new year?
Yeah, not this year. I'm usually not a huge New Year's Eve guy. I'm not one of those guys that's going to say amateur hour. That's so cliche. But I do tend to stay in and stay away from that, if anything, because, gosh, everything seems to be jacked up six prices. But I'm looking forward to ringing in the new year quietly and counting my blessings and looking back on what's been probably the greatest year of my life, just getting the chance to come home and fulfill my dreams here at KU. But it'll be a much more docile and relaxed New Year's than some, we'll put it that way.
That sounds good. All right, time for the off-the-wall question for you.
Sure.
And it's today's Facebook question of the day on our website. And that is, who was your favorite musical group when you were growing up?
Oh, man. I think my generation, growing up in Topeka, Kansas, in the era of Cooley High Harmony and Boys to Men, I used to love those guys, and I would, like, lip-sync to their music. Like, as embarrassing as this sounds, I'm pretty self-deprecating, but I would, like, have the hairbrush as my microphone, and I'd be, you know, jamming out, looking in the mirror, you know, acting out their songs on Bended Knee and Motown Philly and all that. And I won't get into, you know, 13-year-old singing some of their other romantic songs, but point is, I love Boys to Men, and that was the group I always wanted to see in person and never had a chance to. I got to see All for One when they came through Topeka at the Expo Center back in the day, but never got to see Boys to Men, and now they're in Vegas from time to time, so I got to make that happen and cross that off the bucket list, because back in the early 90s, man, I thought those guys had the best pipes going, and End of the Road was amazing in that Eddie Murphy movie that featured that boomerang. So definitely my favorite group growing up was a little R&B action from my friends at Boys to Men.
A radio guy I'm picturing in front of a mirror with a hairbrush doing a jig to Boys to Men. That's an interesting visual, I must say.
Did I paint the picture too vividly? You know, we as a play-by-play guy crew, we have to paint the picture, but maybe I gave you too much information.
At times that's a blessing, Brian. In this case, it might have been a curse. Yeah. You know, the other thing I'll ask you before I let you go is one of the reasons I came up with that question today is because my sister growing up, she just played New Kids on the Block over and over on a video cassette. And we had one TV when I was growing up, and it was just constant New Kids on the Block. And I'm not a New Kids on the Block fan, but I can go ahead and hum the tune to every song because I heard it so many times it's ingrained in my head like a bad TV commercial. But was there a musical group that you grew up with that you just couldn't stand and got sick of? Like in that situation, for me, it was New Kids on the Block.
See, I think Wade's totally overcompensating. He actually has NKTB posters up, you know, in some corner of his house.
No.
He doesn't want people to know that, much like me in the mirror and the hairbrush. But, I don't know. You know, it was cool to say other bands weren't cool as a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's certain people you're like, oh, I don't like them. You know, and that's still true today. I think it'll always be true with adolescent music listeners. But I didn't hate on anybody too much. But it's interesting how guys that were cool for a minute, you then turned on them later, like Hammer or...
Yes.
You know, Vanilla Ice. And yet, to this day, Vanilla Ice is probably number two in my rotation of karaoke arsenal. So, I won't hate on him and say that whatever his name, Van Winkle, his real name in real life is, because he was awfully talented, at least for one song, man. Yo, Vanilla, kick it one time, boy.
There's a liner. Brian Haney, the new and honorary member of Milli Vanilli, as he said, he lip-synced. So you could have easily
right.
fit that group. That would have been great.
That's you, right. Blame it on the rain, Wade.
Oh, that's a great way to end it. Hey, man. Yeah, I won't. oh, my. Happy New Year, buddy. And we know 2016, as you said, was a great year for you and I think for a lot of people as well. And best wishes in 2017. And we'll talk to you next Thursday. And we'll talk more music next week. How's that?
Absolutely. I look forward to it, man. The off-the-wall stuff is always fun. I'm very blessed and thrilled to get to come on with you guys on a weekly basis. So thanks for all you do, and we'll see you in 2017.
Take care. Safe travels, Brian.
See you, bud.
That's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, every single Thursday at 9:30 right here on the Sports Ticket. And his appearance on the Sports Ticket is brought to you by the fine folks over at Anderson Insurance Agency. Did you farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance? Stop by and see Matt and Michelle, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.